It was reported earlier today that the first Ebola patient diagnosed in the U.S., Thomas Eric Duncan, has died. We know he traveled to the U.S. from Liberia. He left that country with no symptoms of the disease, had his temperature taken when he left, but he became ill days later in the U.S. Today, federal officials announced they would begin taking the temperatures of passengers coming from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea at New York's JFK airport starting this weekend, and at four other airports beginning next week. Those will include Washington's Dulles, Chicago's O'Hare International, Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta, and Newark Liberty International. Right now, we want to take the pulse of Liberia. Jason Beaubien is NPR's global health and development correspondent. He's in Monrovia. This is the third time he's traveled to West Africa to report on Ebola. So, Jason, thank you for speaking with us.
No problem.
So how has Monrovia, again, this is the capital, changed? You visited in August. How has it changed?
Things are very different now. You really get a sense that the international community is stepping up. There are hospitals, Ebola treatment units going up. You know, these are basically hospitals in tents that are getting built. There are a lot of aid vehicles around. You know, the hotels are full where most of the aid workers work. There's very much a buzz here that the international community is on it, and there's a lot of activity.
Tell us about these temporary hospitals, because we'd been reading that officials were trying to put these up to get people out of homes so that they don't infect people in homes, but they wouldn't be fully equipped like a hospital is. So are people willing to go there?
Yeah, all along there have been sort of these Ebola treatment units, which are sort of a scaled down version of a hospital anyway. It's just some beds, it's a place where people would come and look after them. There would be isolation units. They would try to do sort of rehydration of people. In the better ones, you might get an IV, but really it's not a lot of care. It's, you know, they're providing aspirin. There is no cure for Ebola. So it's basically supportive care. And that was what was happening in even, you know, the best Ebola treatment units. Now they're talking about sort of a scaled down version of that. They're calling them community care centers. And these are really just, as you say, an opportunity to get people out of the communities. It's somewhere that's going to be isolated, and people would be cared for by one of their relatives. They would be given, their relatives would be given protective equipment and be able to look after them in this place until there was a bed in one of these treatment units.
Quite something. Well, and you've been speaking to public officials. So what are they saying to you about, you know, what's going on there?
You know, there's very much a sense here that a lot still needs to be done. This disease has spread throughout the entire country. It really is dominating daily life. It's, you know, on the radio. It's all people are talking about. You know, even just human interactions, any human interaction that you have, there's sort of this sense that Ebola is part of the what's affecting culture here now. People don't shake hands. No one touches each other. People at the bus stop are all staying arm's length away from each other. You know, this is very unusual for West Africa, where, you know, it used to be people would very warmly shake your hand. Maybe would hold on to it for sometimes it felt almost a little too long at first. And so that's very much been a change. And it also, I was out in a small community out in Bomi, which is just north of the capital, yesterday, and went to a community meeting there where people were just bringing up their concerns, and everything is being affected. You know, people are saying that they want to have a funeral, and the medical officers are saying they're not allowing any funerals, even for people who are not dying from Ebola. All funerals now have to be done by the county health officials because they want to make sure that no Ebola deaths slip through the cracks and people are burying their people on their own. And in addition, they don't want people gathering for large funerals. They want to make sure that people are not coming in from other places. And, you know, and there's issues with orphans, and there's issues with the cemeteries are completely full. So it's really, you know, having an effect across almost every level of these small communities.
Well, we're reminded Thomas Eric Duncan, who died today in Dallas, when he was in Liberia, he helped a family friend who was pregnant. He took her to the hospital. She later died of Ebola. A CNN reporter went to the home where he'd lived and asked family members if they knew that she had Ebola, and they all said no, they didn't know. They thought she was ill from the pregnancy. So I can imagine this might be tearing families apart. What's happening on a very personal level?
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, people, for one, don't want to admit that they have Ebola. They don't want to admit that one of their loved ones has Ebola. And they don't want to admit that they've had contact with someone who died clearly from Ebola. People, in part, don't want to admit it because to themselves that they have it because they're saying, well, it's a death sentence and that they're not going to survive. So people are in denial on that level. Then if you were in contact with somebody, you might get quarantined, and people don't want to get quarantined. So they say, oh, I didn't have any contact with that person. Or, you know, they don't want to admit that that person that they had contact with actually had the disease. It's really making things difficult. And then you're getting people who are surviving and coming out, and they're being stigmatized. And as the community I was talking about yesterday, they didn't want any of the survivors to get their jobs back in the hospital where they used to work because they don't think they should be in there. So there's levels of misunderstanding about what's happening. You know, so survivors now are basically immune to the disease, but the local community doesn't want them working in the healthcare centers because they're afraid of them. You know, there's all of these social issues, sort of tearing people apart at a time when you've got this awful virus hanging over, you know, every aspect of daily life.
But what an irony that you describe. I mean, when you were there in August, it seems like things were kind of boarded up. Now, because of this terrible virus, it sounds like the place is bustling. I mean, there must be revenue coming into Monrovia and Liberia along with all of those aid workers.
Yeah, there definitely is. There's a lot of money flowing in as well. People are trying to get jobs in some of these treatment centers that are being created. They're doing training for people so that they'll be able to work in them. However, things still are very difficult for people trying to run businesses. The airlines, there's only a couple of airlines that are still coming in here. All of the schools are shut. There's a big port here, and some of the shipping lines are refusing to come in. Exxon decided that they were going to delay some drilling that they're going to do off the coast. So economically, it still very much is hitting this place hard, even though you're getting this flow from another economic source in terms of the aid money that's coming in.
That's NPR's Jason Beaubien, his third trip to West Africa, his second to Monrovia there in Liberia. Jason, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.